Okay, the agri-food regulator has been established, and it promises, the promise to Donegal farm families, farmers and food producers is that they'll get the protection necessary to ensure they get a fair deal for their, their work through the regulator. Niamh Lenehan is food regulator CEO. I don't know why I keep saying food. Food regulator CEO. Niamh, good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks so much for the invite.
So talk to me about the function of the agri-food regulator.
Well, again, thank you for the invite here this morning on a topic that's of interest, of course, to all listeners in terms of, you know, our understanding of the agri-food supply chain. So Unruly AgriVia, or the Agri-Food Regulator, was set up to promote fairness and transparency all along our agri-food supply chain. So we're going to do that in two main ways. In the first instance, we have a price and market analysis and reporting function. And essentially, that means shining a light on the agri-food chain about how it works, etc., and producing reports on that. And in that way, enabling a particular producer and farmers inform their decision making. And second of all, we have an enforcement function in terms of enforcing unfair trading law. So overseeing compliance with unfair trading practices.
So just an example, if I produce potatoes, right, and I'm not happy with the amount of money I'm getting for them, I believe that they're that I should be paid more, yet at the same time they're being used by a local supermarket chain as a loss leader. They're being sold for what I'm being paid for them just to get people in through the door. Is that something the regulator could look at, and how might it look at it? Or if you want to pick a better example, feel free to do so.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yes. Well, our role is, as I said, to promote fairness and transparency. So we're shining a light on how the agri-food chain works. And I suppose in particular, how the price formation mechanisms work. So as I said, we will be publishing reports, et cetera, on that with the direction, of course, of the Agri-Food Regulator Board. But I suppose if I may talk about the unfair trading practices, I suppose in particular, so there are 16 of these. There are 10 that are prohibited in all circumstances. And these relate, for example, to the late payment for agri-food products. So in general, perishable products must be paid for within 30 days, non-perishable 60 days. There are other practices that are prohibited, such as unilateral changes in contracts. So, you know, breaking a contract or changing a contract at short notice, etc. And then there are other items that are prohibited unless expressly agreed between the supplier and the buyer in advance. So examples of that include, payment for promotion, marketing, advertising. So we are the body set up to oversee these compliance with unfair trading practices.
Okay, so just to be clear then, so how, in layman's terms, sorry, because I'm just so I can get it, how do you make sure that farming families, as is promised in this press release, get a fair deal? I would have thought a fair deal means proper payment for what they produce. So how do you ensure, or do you have the remit to ensure that that happens?
Yeah, well, we are going to undertake the remit that we were given through these two functions. So it's about adding fairness and transparency, or promoting fairness and transparency. So for example, from what you're saying there, the whole idea of the regulator is to shine the light on that agri-food supply chain, how it operates, as I said, the price formation mechanisms at each stage. So there's a number of stages between the producer and the consumer. There is quite a lot of information at the production side, and less so as you go through the different stages, for example, towards the consumer. So our job is to shine a light, fill those gaps. So obviously engage extensively with actors in the food chain, as I said, to fill those gaps. And that is the way that transparency and fairness will be promoted in the chain.
All right. So we will know, say, for instance, if I produce a product, it costs me €1 to produce it, and it's sold in a shop for €8, you're going to shine a light so we know how that money is broken down, whether a factory is involved or a third party is involved. You're going to show us that. How does that help the producer?
Yes. So the idea is that, as you say, it's shining a light on each stage of the food chain. Well, of course, it will help the producer in terms of informing their decisions. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's necessarily a chain. So all of the links in the chain need to be sustainable in their own right. And it has to be fair, obviously, to be sustainable all along the chain. And there's interdependencies here, obviously, all along the chain. So by shining a light and increasing the amount of market information that there is across the chain, all businesses will be they're better informed in terms of their decisions, and that's the whole purpose of the office, in increasing transparency.
Yeah. Okay. Now, and also to other sort of other protections in place, right? So, say for instance, I'm a producer, and I don't want to be frozen out, okay, because I won't do a deal with a retailer that's a disadvantage to me. Do you know what I mean? So, in other words, at the moment, you know, people might be doing deals that keeps their head above the water, but they're not good deals for them in terms of what cut they're getting of the overall price. So how do we ensure that these regulators don't actually make it more difficult for some of these producers if they won't play ball with the next link up the chain or the top of the chain? Are there any further protections in there to make sure that this won't have a counterintuitive effect?
Well, what we have at the moment are these 16 unfair trading practices. And essentially, in a nutshell, they are there to help balance the bargaining power between buyers and suppliers. The suppliers have protection in terms of where their turnover is less than that of the buyer, and the buyer's turnover is over 2 million. So these suppliers actually have the protection of these unfair trading practices. The agri-food regulator, in turn, has significant powers in terms of investigation powers, but also it doesn't have to be essentially on the basis of a complaint. The agri-food regulator can and will have boots on the ground in terms of these also.
And just one other question, and I know it's early days and things are being teased out, but part of the aim of this is to ensure that producers get fair reward and a fair price. So is there anything in there that, so they say that is to happen, there's nothing in there that means that it won't get passed on to me, for instance, as a customer, or maybe a supermarket might absorb more of that? That's just up to the market to decide, is it? There's no, you don't have any regulatory authority in that regard?
No, as you say, our job is not to do with setting prices. Our job is to promote fairness and transparency across the agri-food supply chain. As I said, increasing the amount of information that's available, and in doing so, inform businesses of providing more information for businesses on which to make those decisions.
And do you see your role having any impact, say, for instance, on the reintroduction of a below-cost selling ban?
We don't have any. It was certainly something that was spoken about as the legislation was going through the legislative process. Our remit is not to do with below-cost selling. But as I said, in terms of the transparency side of this and providing more information on the agri-food chain, there will be more understanding with this information of the challenges that are present within the agri-food supply chain today.
I'm not picking holes in it because it has to be. I'm just curious how that helps the Donegal Farm families, farmers and food producers, that we might have more awareness. Like, I know already that there are people producing products that are a sale down the road for less than they're getting paid for. I'm just curious as to how all of this and all of the people that are employed to do it means that person producing that product gets more money.
Well, as I said, we're not involved in the setting of prices.
No.
But obviously the main benefit here is that there is more information available on which decisions are made. So our job, and we're set up to promote fairness and transparency, And there are other items that we haven't talked about that are in the Act as well, yeah, such as codes of practice and guidelines and those sort of tools that can help to increase the understanding of challenges along the food chain. Mm-hmm. So these are yet to be explored, and they will be explored in conjunction, obviously, with the strategy that will be set in the coming months through the board.
So just finally, in your position, as has been outlined, you're confident that at the moment, if Donegal Farm families aren't getting a fair reward and aren't getting a fair price for the massive work that they do, that in the future, because of the establishment of this regulator, they will start to get a fair reward and a fair price?
No, I am confident that the agri-food regulator will promote fairness and transparency in the agri-food chain.
You won't ensure it as per the press release, though, no?
Yes, it's promoting fairness and transparency, and in doing so, increasing the fairness along the food chain. It has to be understood as well that in terms of Irish produce, we're an exporting nation in terms of much of our agri-food products. So, you know, when you talk about price, it's not only what happens within these borders, obviously. We've significant export markets that impact on the price as well. But we can look at those price formation mechanisms and understand them better. And that's what our job is.
And I suppose our job as consumers as well is to make decisions, you know, with that information that you talk of.
Yes.
And I'm not, I hope you don't think of being argumentative. I just want to really have an understanding of it, because we're right at the beginning. We're right at the beginning of this. And then I have this information for going forward. But I mean, at the end of the day, we have to make decisions as consumers as whether we support or shop local or whatever it might be that helps promote the fairness and the reward. OK, listen, it's been lovely speaking to you, Niamh. Thank you very much for talking to us so early in this process. We really do appreciate it. Maybe we can come back in the future when everything's bedded in a little bit more and we have, you know, scenarios that we've seen play out and what have you. I'll look forward to that chat as well. Is that OK, Niamh?
Absolutely. And thank you very much for the invite.
No, thank you for accepting. That's Niamh Lenehan there, Food Regulator CEO. Now, as it's written in the papers today, I'll read it. Groups of feral youth and organised gangs are causing an explosion in crimes against retailers. This was what was heard at an Oireachtas committee. They descend like a plague of locusts and rob to order. Tara Buckley, the Director General of Retail, Grocery, Dairy and Allied Traders Association, which represents over 3,500 local shops, said. And Tara Buckley's with us now. Tara, that's incredibly strong language. Feral youths, a plague of locusts. But it obviously must be pretty serious to be using that terminology.
Unfortunately, Greg, it is. And that's one of the reasons, I suppose, is we survey our members who are supermarkets and convenience stores all over the country every year. And we have noted that year in, year out, the problem is getting bigger and worse. And the people that they're dealing with, who are only a tiny percentage, I have to emphasise, of their customers. I mean, most of our members are local community shops, and their local community are fantastic customers and appreciate them. And our members really appreciate the customers, but they and their staff, and they want to make their shops a safe place for people to come and enjoy the experience and for staff to enjoy working in the stores. But we've had a problem over the last number of years, particularly since COVID, where we seem to be dealing with a very small minority of really angry people, and they are making life very uncomfortable and stressful for the workers in the stores and for the other customers.
Do you think this is culture? I don't know what the right word is, but there seems to have been a breaking down of respect for things like, among certain people, the Garda, ambulance, fire service, retail. Do you think they're all sort of interconnected, that it is post kind of COVID, that, you know, you go in there and you can sort of say whatever you like and you know, they can like it or lump it?
Well, there's definitely a certain age group who seem to think they're completely untouchable. And I certainly believe that for them, when they come into shops and steal things, they do it very openly. They abuse the staff if they confront them. So, and even though it's a small minority, if it's happening in your store every day, it's very stressful for everybody working in the store and for the other customers.
So they obviously are fearless. They don't fear being challenged on the premises. And clearly, obviously, they don't fear being apprehended or taken before the courts or facing any sanction. So what is the solution then?
Well, we believe that because given that there's serial shoplifters who are adults and that what we need with them is we need the sentences to be carried out. We need them to be we believe that serial offenders should see prison sentences for their offences. So we would like to see that to be carried out in the courts. And then for the young people, we believe it requires probably some type of a task force between education, justice, social protection and enterprise to look at what are the reasons why these kids have got out of control and what can be done collectively to address the issues and causes and make, you know, turn them into nice model citizens, which the rest of their community are.
I mean, I'm sure you've heard the argument, and it's the easiest one in the world to make, is to sort of flip it on to the cost of living crisis, or these are just people that that can't feed themselves and they're desperate and that's why they're doing this. Do you subscribe to that at all? Do you think that's a driver in any of this? I mean, I presume we're not talking about baby milk and nappies being stolen here.
Greg, the three retailers who were at the committee yesterday said that the reality is what's being stolen is nothing to do with cost of living crisis. What's being stolen is alcohol, cigarettes, personal care, high worth items. And that's just from the stores I represent who are food and convenience. What's been stolen are mobile phones, fancy runners, jewellery, you know, in the other types of retail setting. And it's adding up to 1.6 billion in terms of costs to the retail sector. So, and this has been happening since, you know, for the last number of years, it's just been growing year in, year out. So it's, we don't believe it's anything to do with any cost of living crisis.
No, and I think in any society, whatever it is we need to have respect for each other, because once that is gone, you know, once there's no fear, once that, retail and the workers in it primarily would be my concern, of course, once they're seen as fair game, or, you know, it's almost like a victimless crime, you know, you start to see the breakdown there of something that could have far reaching ramifications across all of society. And I say, I know you're quick to point out it is a minority, but you know yourself, these things can take hold, if not countrywide, certainly in a city or a part of a city or what have you.
Yes, and the other concerning thing for our members is that they see some of these people starting in their stores as very young children, and they watch and they see them grow, and it may start off as robbing a few things, and then it escalates to arriving in the store with a knife or a weapon. So they believe that if this could be nipped in the bud and tackled when they start at a very young age, it could actually help them not to go down a pathway of crime and go down a better pathway. And that's really what their motivation is.
I presume there's a frustration in that. Listen, we know the Gardaí are under-resourced. They land after the fact. You know, CCTV footage, someone with a hood, I don't know. You know, it could be really quite easy to say, well, this is very difficult to police. Also, do we really need the prisons or whatever it might be full of people that are involved in this activity? You need really Drew Harris, it's his job really, or the Justice Minister, whomever, to come up with a solution to this, an appropriate punishment, a deterrent to break the cycle, clearly, because there's a cycle. I do it, I say, hey, it's handy. I tell my mate, he does it. And then I'm thinking, well, why should I miss out? I do it. So you need something from Drew Harris and his team really to take this seriously, say this is 1.6 bill, which is more than way more than we seize in drugs, for instance, in this country, right across the country annually. You need a plan of action from Drew Harris, I take it.
We need a plan of action from Drew Harris. We need a plan of action. And I'll be very honest, right around the country, Orgy Data members are, you know, they're very supportive of their local guards, because we're all dealing with the same angry, aggressive people. So we understand how frustrating it is for the guards as much as it's frustrating for the shopkeepers and their staff. So we are very supportive of anything that can be done to improve the resources for the guards. Visibility of Gardaí is hugely important. Every member of ours who operates in towns and villages, cities, if there are guards around, everyone feels safe.
And just paint, just to, how simply that works is if you believe there could be Gardaí on a main street, someone leaves the store, a member of staff just steps outside the door. It's a fantasy now at this point, but there is a couple of guards or a guard 100 metres up the street. They give chase. In other words, that would be a deterrent. You can see very quickly how that would break a cycle. But without that visual presence of An Garda Síochána, kind of the people responsible, no, they're gone before a guard even lands.
Absolutely. And then the other frustration for the guards is they put together a case. Our members help them. We put the CCTV footage. We make the statements. We take a day off work to go down and stay down at the courts. And the judge may give them a slap on the wrist or probation or, you know, bail or whatever. And they just walk out and they could be back in the shop robbing it later the same day. So that's a frustration for the guards and the shopkeepers that we would like to see the courts address. We also think that it does require something extra for the younger offenders, those who are underage. We believe that that requires something and a bit of thought put into that. Now, there was a suggestion at the committee yesterday that there was a system put up in place in the States, like a community court system, which was something where you could be brought the next day to a local community court where you would be, and it would be dealt with very quickly. So there wouldn't be the long delays you have between putting a case together, arriving in court, and having the, you know, it's a long process and it's quite a complicated and time consuming process. We believe something quicker, more impactful, and it doesn't need, it's not we're talking about going to prison, but what we're saying is that the crime has a consequence.
Well, look,
so that becomes
a
deterrent.
At the end of the day, if someone is on a wrong path, you know, we have a moral obligation, not necessarily to call them scumbags and finger them for the rest of their lives, but to put them on a better path, to say that's not acceptable. Do you know what I mean? Because we don't want this to be the behaviour for the rest of their lives. They deserve a bit of guidance. I think we owe them a bit of guidance that might be lacking in their lives. Tara Buckley, Director General of RG Data, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Take care of yourself again. Is that a problem for you out there if you're a retailer, a shop owner? Petrol station drive-offs as well, I'm sure, is an issue as well. Sometimes we do it by accident, other times maybe not. Could you give a mention to Cockhill School for the great show they put on in the Inishowen Gateway Hotel last night? A great production of The Lion King. The children were all fantastic. And a thank you to Elizabeth O'Donnell for all her hard work. There's two things going on there. People like Elizabeth O'Donnell putting in the hard work and the amazing talent we have right across this county and country. The young people, give them a chance and they know how to do it. We've had three young lads in here. I mean, they're not spring chickens anymore, but in singing, you have to give them a platform and an opportunity to perform, and it's great to see it. Morning, Greg. Could you give a mention to Daniel Kearney, who turns 91 this weekend? He's an avid listener to your show. Many thanks. Daniel Kearney, good morning to you. Thank you so much for listening, and it's great to have you on board. And turning 91, it's not so bad, is it? Okay, Daniel, if you ever want to chat on air, come on, give us a ring. We can have a talk as well. Don't just listen to the show, Daniel, be the show. Is there an update on the little girl in Dublin? How is her health? Yes, there is. In fact, her mother said that she's a battler, and they hope to have her off intensive care before the end of the year. She was gravely ill. Suffered very severe, a tiny little body of hers stabbed. It's absolutely heartbreaking. But apparently this girl is a fighter, and her mother was optimistic that she would be out of intensive care by the end of the year. So we've fingers crossed that turns out to be the case. Right. Kilgore joins us on the programme now. I think it is Kilgore. Good morning to you.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Right, your comment on our last topic there, which we're still on, of course, about crime, young people and crime.
Yeah, consequences. There is no... I don't know if you know, I worked as a Garda Reserve for 12 years, but there's no consequences for kids anymore. I mean, they don't seem to... And I know for a fact, because I've been there... They don't care. They know nothing's going to happen to them. They don't care. And I would put it down to parents. I mean, do the parents, should they have consequences? If anybody under 18 doesn't have any consequences apart from a slap, not even a slap on the wrist, they're told, don't do that again, and that's it. You get a warning. They get warning after warning, and they don't care. And it's the same, unfortunately, people can turn around and say this, that, and the other, but it's the same ones all the time.
Yeah, and it's the lack of fear of consequences, and to the point, too, and I've seen it, whereby they've been in court, their picture coming out of the court, it might be on Donegal Daily or Donegal News or The Democrat or wherever it might be, and there's no shame in it. It's almost, for some, obviously, it's almost like a badge of honour, you know?
Exactly.
Whereas to you or to me, it would feel, at least for a time, that everything was over. Do you know that sort of a way? But where does your mind have to be that you'd see that as, yes, I've made it? You know what I mean? So it's scary. I find it scary. Worrying. I find it worrying.
It is worrying. But maybe this is just a suggestion. Maybe, as I say, if anybody under 18 basically doesn't have to worry because nothing's going to happen to them, maybe their parents then. And maybe it should be financial, because in this day and age, I'm afraid the only thing that people seem to...
Money talks.
Mm. And if you make parents financially responsible, and it comes out, I don't care what, where, when. People say, oh, people are on the breadline, they can't afford it. If I get a fine, it doesn't mean to say I can afford it.
I don't disagree with you, right? But I think, I think I always would favour a carrot and stick. If we were to do that, and I wouldn't be opposed to it because I think it would be a good idea, but we also then have to support parents, okay? So say, for instance, we go to the parents of a child that's in doing this behaviour, and they're like, they're desperate themselves or whatever it might be, that we also have supports for them. And I mean, in other words, like, work with them to say if the child needs to be put on a programme or something, or maybe they've got issues in their life and they're not able to focus on the rearing of their child or whatever it might be. Like, I know what you're saying, and it would be, you would imagine it'd be a short, sharp fix, blame the parents. But I think at the same time too, sometimes where it would be appropriate, you need to also have supports in there to support parents, maybe. Because you don't, you know, if you're driving a car, you do 12 courses, you know, you have to go through a couple of tests, you get your car right. There's no training for having a child, or for when it turns into a teenager. You're sort of left to your own devices. Am I being too wishy-washy, or do you think there's any argument in your favour, Kilgore?
Part of me understands exactly what you're saying, but there's a big part of me inside. Like, I had nothing apart from what my parents taught me. I raised two kids, never were in trouble in their life, never had trouble with them, because they knew if there was going to be trouble, they would have me to answer to, and their mother more than anything. So, but I never had to. I never had any bother. I absolutely understand.
But they
what
always
you're saying,
respected you. I bet you, Kilgore, they always respected you, though. So if you said something, they go, right, okay, Dad. Or if your mother did. You know what I mean? So you would have established that respect from an early age, that they wouldn't want to disappoint you or upset you. And I think that's a great currency in trying to discipline children is if they understand the impact their actions might have on you or their relationship with you.
But you do go, like, I have been to parents, and we have gone in and talked to the parents, and the parents don't. You have a fiddler's elbow.
For right or wrong, and I'm not blaming anyone, okay? But for right or wrong, there's an awful lot of criticism of the Gardaí and their authority, and you can't tell me to do that, and I'll do what I like, and I can do whatever I want. And in fairness, a lot of it's coming from adults. And as I say, I know where that's coming from, and I'm not in the blame game. But there are younger people that hear that are influenced by that, and go, well, maybe that's just the way it is. Maybe the guards are useless. Maybe they're, you know, the arm of a state. Maybe I don't need to respect them. And I just think maybe sometimes as adults, we have to understand that, you know, even whilst we might be campaigning for something we're important to, there is a next generation and a generation after that consequence sometimes. Again, maybe I'm down a rabbit hole there, but I just think a lot of this seems to stem from the disrespect from Gardaí when they were forced to impose a lot of the COVID restrictions, for an example.
Well, I have to say, I worked during COVID and all that, and there was always the same section of people that you always had to hassle, a very, very small minority. Most kids are fantastic. There's no problem as far as dealing with the guards, no hassle. As far as being at night time when there no problems at all, it was always the same section of people, for some reason, that seemed to give the hassle. And as I say, I worked with guards, and I mean, I have to say an awful lot of them went out of their way to try and help kids, but you might as well have been talking to a wall between the parents and everything else. They just didn't want to know. They didn't want to know. It was like, I used to work in a pub, and we used to say that you'd get children that coming in, and I used to say they're free range. The parents would let them run all over the place, and you had to tell them, look, be careful this, be careful that. And then you'd get other ones that, you know, they looked after the kids, they kept them beside them. Do you understand?
Mm. Yeah.
And, no matter what you would say to these people, there are certain people, they just, I don't know, they just don't seem to get it. And I genuinely think that parents, and it has, unless we change something to do with under 18s, I don't know if that would work, but parents have to pay the price.
And I mean, a lot of the conversation now is, and it's very justified, and that's why we platform it, is about the threat and the fear of what could come into this country. And I just wonder if maybe if it suits us sometimes to turn a blind eye as to what's happening in this country, not by people that have just come here, but by, you know, people that live here all the time. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying saying one replaces the other. Don't get me wrong. But like, we seem to.
I agree.
When you look at the amount of children that are seeking support through Childline, and the awful cases of abuse and people being caught out trying to meet kids and abuse them, and how women are being beaten in the home, and how men are being, you know, coercively controlled in the home, and all of that kind of stuff, and how some of our young people are acting out. And we don't talk about that. It kind of doesn't suit us to talk about that. We find it far more easy to talk about a perceived threat than the reality that's on the ground. Again, I'm not trying to be controversial. I'm just trying to tease out a conversation if it's worthy of being had, Kilgore.
There is an awful lot that has gone on. But I genuinely think, and I know was in Garda Síochána in particular, between domestic violence and abuse, they are really going out of their way to focus on it. But it doesn't seem to matter what they do, they're being condemned left, right and centre. I would love if some of these people that are condemning the Gardaí done what I done, went out, not just for one day or 2 days, went out for a while at different times to see what these young men and women have to contend with. Mm. And I mean, they're not trained for it, that's for sure. Maybe they should be trained better, but I mean, some of the things that you have to listen to, have to do, and again, if they go out and they see, it's always the same people, and it's Irish people. I don't want to put that. It's most of it's Irish people that are doing all the hassle. You know what I mean, it's not people that are. I'm sure there is everything. It's not people coming into the country.
There's bad people. If you get 100 people,
there's bad people everywhere.
If you get 100 people, there's a percentage of them are going to be bad. Now it's a low percentage, but it doesn't matter where you come from, whatever. You know, I mean, you get a random 100 people, and if you look at say, well, I won't get into it now. I don't want to be but let's say, for instance, the prison population of Ireland. If you look at the prison population of Ireland, it's actually proportionate to the breakdown of Irish versus non-Irish versus, you know, a lot of the non-Irish are English, for an example. But if you look at the percentages, like say, for instance, of those incarcerated, it's around about 14% are non-Irish. Okay, and a lot of people have been saying, oh, that's disproportionate, blah, blah, blah. But if you look at the percentage of the population that's non-Irish, it's actually 17%. So the prison population very slightly underrepresents, if that makes sense, you know. But if you take the 14% in isolation as the prison population, it seems like a shocker, right? But if you then actually compare it to the population of Ireland, 17% are non-Irish, most of them are English actually, rather than from anywhere else. It just talks to my point that you get 100 people, doesn't matter where they're from, there's going to be a certain percentage of them are not going to be good people or going to be committing crime. Yeah. All right, Kilgore, thanks for that. Appreciate it. Some people agreeing with you. It seems quite obvious. But anyway, listen, we'll get more comments as the morning wears on. Thanks for your time. Appreciate it. Take care of yourself. Rocking around the Christmas. Okay, we're back. Right. So, Kate, it's time for our competition in association with McGee's Chemist. On this week's show, we've got a hamper worth over €500 to be won, courtesy of McGee's Chemist at Tricheny and McGee's.ie. In it, a Clarence Christmas hamper, a blank canvas 12-piece gold makeup brush set, a large blank canvas purple 3-piece gift set, and Be Perfect Muted palette, and a 20x16 gallery wrap canvas so you can shove your mug on it and stick it on the wall. That's tomorrow. Every day, though, this week, we're giving away a lovely perfume or a spray. Today, it is a 50ml Christian Dior Sauvage EDT spray. Now, who's going to take part in the competition today? I think it's going to be in Manor Cunningham, and we'll go to Mary Sweeney in Rooski. Good morning to you, Mary.
Hi, Greg.
How are you feeling, Mary? How are you getting on?
Yeah, go on.
Are you on the, do you be on the radio much, Mary, or is this your first time? Or
no, not really, no.
Okay, very good. And what are you doing today, Mary, may I ask?
Just getting Christmas ready here, getting everything organised here, getting presents wrapped and different stuff.
It's probably the only time you get a bit of peace and quiet to do it, is it? Is that the,
yeah,
is that
that's the situation? Not everybody's away.
Exactly. All right, okay. Well, listen, don't wrap mine too tight because I don't want to be too long on wrapping it on Christmas morning, right, Mary? So just don't go over the top.
Bother.
Good stuff, all right. Now, come here. I'm going to play you a little bit of a song. It's kind of backwards, right? But I'm not going to leave you hanging here. If you don't get it, I'll try and help, all right? Okay. And you'd be winning this 50ml Christian Dior Sauvage EDT spray, which is for fellas, it's for man, but I mean women can wear it too, so I don't know if you've got someone that you might give it to.
Yeah, I have.
You have, okay. Very good. Well, we'll say no more then. We're keeping your cards close to your chest. All right, listen, have a listen to this, Mary. See if you recognise this track. My God, I haven't a clue what that is. Do you have any idea?
Is it Rockin' Round the Christmas Tree?
Wow. Well done, Mary. Exactly right? Who it is. Yeah, from Brenda Lee. Nice one. How did you get that?
I don't know. I just recognised the lyrics, some of the lyrics. I know they were backwards.
You are a genius. You are a genius, Mary Sweeney. Now, come here. You have that. You have got that 50ml Christian Dior EDT spray. Oh, sorry, that's for fellas. No, that's for fellas. Oh, it is.
No,
I said that already, didn't I?
The other bottle's nearly finished. I'm getting.
Well, what's he got? What's he already has that one?
Oh, yeah, it's almost finished.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, there you go. Hopefully he's not listening and you can stick it in the Christmas box. All right, listen, Mary, you're also in the draw for this hamper tomorrow. See, for 1 in 5 chance. So tune in for that. But you don't have to tune in. We'll call you if you win. But I would prefer if you tuned in, obviously. Every listener counts. You have a 1 in 5 chance of collecting that tomorrow. So well done, Mary. I'll let you back to it. Okay.
Thanks, Greg.
Have a good one, Mary. Take care, Mary Sweeney there, cleaning the house, wrapping the presents, having a bit of crack. Okay. We're going to be joined by our next guest, Eunan. If you don't mind holding, I do have to take a very quick break and I'll be back to you in a sec. You know, a lot of us know, either directly or indirectly, the hassle of getting to a test now or getting your test date. It's tough. It's expensive. You have to do the lessons, of course, and then you have to wait 6 months after you get your provisional license, and then you can apply, and then you could get a date 4 months out, and then it can slip to 5 or 6 months. Anyway, for young people, I think particularly, there's an awful lot of stress just getting to that test. And I think, Eunan, for your young lad, it's been even more stressful for him. I think you probably recognise that story, do you, about trying to get them on the road safely? It takes a long time, and it's not cheap, Eunan.
Yeah, it takes a while, all right, Greg. It's just a normal enough procedure for a young fella to, you know, be heading towards his test, or a young girl. And, you know, it's a big deal. An exam of any sort is a big deal, especially when you're trying to get out on the road. And like, my young fella's 20 years of age, like, and he's a working young fella, and transport for him would be great, you know, and he can't really do that till he gets himself a license. So, I mean, what you outlined there about the procedure up to the point of actually taking the test, it's a big deal, and there's a lot happening, and some people are waiting online or whatever. But Niall's particular situation, he was, when he sat the test, he found that the examiner was there, and plus there was examiners sitting in the back examining the examiner. So, I mean, immediately,
right, sorry,
what's the nerves that he had?
Just to be clear, to paint the picture here, are you saying there was four people in the car?
Well, I'm not. I've said that now, and I'm not exactly sure how many he told me. I know there was two other examiners, on the car. So I think there was four people in the car, including Niall.
But at least there was definitely one in the back. Whether there was another one just assessing the convo, but definitely one in 100%. The back. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, definitely one in the back. So I mean, I left Niall off, and that morning I was saying to him, you know. Take it like, you know, whatever part of life. I mean, Niall would have been into boxing in his day, whatever, and his time, you know. And I said, look, take it like a fight. You know, the nerves will be there. The adrenaline will be flowing. Just keep cool, you know, and do what you need to do just to get over the line, you know. So he proceeded with that kind of attitude. And, you know, obviously a bit nervous, you know. So I think, you know, when he realised that there was people, other people there when he was driving the car, it was, you know, it really impacts it even more, you know. So, I don't know, for myself, even as a person that I've been driving for many, many years now, I would find that daunting, to be honest with you, Craig, you know.
And listen, in his boxing, he never got in the ring against two or three opponents.
No, not that I know of anyway, but, you know, but
he didn't flunk it either, did he? He kind of just missed out with a few minor infractions.
Yes, it was pretty simple. I think, to be honest with you, the margins were fine. But we were talking, and he didn't tell me this till the conversation went on. You know, that and Niall would be a very placid young fella, mm-hmm. and he wouldn't, if they asked him, is it okay? He would say, I no bother, because, you know, he's not going to say no, because, you know, if you're kind of putting yourself in a bad position, if you say no, you know. But I'm not even sure if they asked him. I didn't even ask him if they asked him, you know, to be honest.
But you know the thing is, Ewan, and I'm not sure if you thought about it, is, as you see, the tester might be nervous because they've got someone testing them. So are they, you know, is it possible that they could, you know, be overly fussy because they're afraid the tester testing them is saying, hold on, you can't be putting people like that in the road. Do you know what I mean? Like, you wonder, unless he was perfect, was he doomed to fail from the beginning?
Well, I'm not saying Niall would or wouldn't pass the test, you know, with his ability to drive. Good driver, very calm young fella. But if you take into consideration, Craig, that if you were sitting and you were scrutinising on a test of somebody doing a test, and there was a couple of boys sitting behind you, and you're thinking, you know, I have to mark this and I have to mark that, because when I go back to and these boys are going to be spitting it out to me, saying, you know what, us two have marked out something that you didn't see. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So he's going to be even more, he's going to be even more sharp. Yeah. And like the least wee thing is going to be up, it's going to be ticked, you know. So, you know, and that's for me, I kind of, and from that point of view, whether Niall done enough himself as a driver to pass or not, you know, is another thing. But yeah, it really tightened the screw on it as far as trying to get over the line. Yeah. On a normal day, he may have passed.
Yeah, of course. And I think maybe even if they said a week in advance, if that was possible, look at, you know, we're hiring new testers or we're reevaluating that, there might be another person in the car. Maybe even he could have said, you know what, I'm going to see if I can get a date 2 weeks later. You know, I just think it does feel a disadvantage, especially when it's so important now for getting about. It does, to deal with that flung on you does appear to me to be a little bit unfair, Ewan. And it would have been great if he passed and we'd never had this conversation. But you'd have to imagine it's going to be a factor in there for the reasons you've been outlining. It's a bit of a shame for him now. But hopefully the wait isn't as long for the next test now, Ewan. And hopefully there's only two people in the car.
Well, I hope so too. But I mean, you know, you pay your money, you go out and do the best you can. And I mean, it's the same for every kid. It's not just for my child or whatever. I mean, everybody wants their child, and you're waiting for that phone call after the test, you know, anticipating what may or may not happen. And I got the phone call and you got a fail, but just look now, let's reapply for today and get it done, you know, because that's the only way to move forward. The only way to move forward is to stay on the horse and keep on that horse till you get him broke, you know. And that's exactly what he done that evening, you know. Yeah. So,
and you know, another thing, for anyone who's a parent of someone under 18, don't for a second think it all stops at 18. It never stops. You're constantly looking after them, aren't you? And sure, we wouldn't have it any other way. Listen, Ewan, fingers crossed.
Before you go, Greg, I'm going to say one thing, and I wanted to say this, I want to say it in Highland Radio now. You know, I collect toys at Christmas and have done for many, many years now. And I just want to thank everybody who has donated to the toys this year, Greg. Be it a voucher, be it whatever, it's been staggering, fantastic, and it's been unbelievable. And it restores your faith in the humankind, you know, to be honest with you. It really does. Every year, people are unreal.
And Donegal, and the difference that's going
I've
to
even
make
had,
to
I've
young
even
people.
Had a pre. I even had a Barry McGuigan sent me a toy from England, you know. So, it reaches out far. Right. People do get connected, you know. So,
well,
I mean,
done,
it was brilliant, you know.
All right,
I just want to thank everybody. And
best wishes.
And Highland Radio as well.
All right, listen, we just mentioned best wishes to Niall. As I say, hopefully it's very, very soon and he'll get the green light next time, no doubt about it. All right, Eunan, have a lovely day. We're back with you tomorrow, Friday panel, That's Entertainment, €500 hamper, another perfume or spray. It's all action tomorrow from 9. Don't go anywhere.